The following is a production of Dirty Mo Media.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of The Teardown. My name is Jeff Gluck, and I'm along with my coworker and friend and everything. Fashion stylist. I threw that one in this week. Jordan Bianchi. Jordan Bianchi, who spent $67 on Amazon. I'm so glad that I can freely talk about this now, Jordan. After
you can find nice looking clothes for inexpensive prices at various places and look good. So you're welcome.
I'm blown away. Look, when I have revealed last week that the Amazon was the source of the clothes that you finally let me say, because that was our deal that I got to, you said you wanted me to do a rap. I said, no, I said, if I do a rap, will you let me say where you got the suit? And you agreed. So that's why I did the rap, just so I could get that out there.
Cool.
And, I wish Amazon was like one of our sponsors. It's not Amazon. Jeff Bezos, are you listening to The Teardown? Please call us, because Jordan has revealed a whole new world to me. I did not know that you could get suits, complete suits on Amazon for $67. And it's nice.
I can't believe we're opening the podcast by talking about this. But I will say, like, there are sports coats that I wear that I get complimented on a lot that I've gotten from Amazon. I mean, you can get nice quality products from Amazon.
Does sound like an ad. Jeff Bezos, you owe us.
What about that race today, Jeff? Yeah. You know what? I mean, you know what? Technically, they are coming in NASCAR next year. So, you know, we're just kind of, okay, you know, we're extending an olive branch, if you will.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. Well, I am here at Circuit of the Americas, where we've seen very, there's a lot of other fashion here for the F1 race when they come. I might wear the pink suit for that if I come back for that. But, yes, and so we've watched another NASCAR road race today. I don't know if we had higher hopes than what we saw, but it is the first race with no natural caution since Road America 2022, another road course race. And, last year there was I think this was the Clutching Pearls podcast where everybody was upset with me because I was so mad about how the restarts went in the triple overtime, whatever. They kept wrecking each other and piling into each other, and it was a clown show, and this was terrible. And so you would think I would be sitting here going, well, I mean, I like this nice, clean race today. Could we not have somewhere in the middle? Like, I don't know. This is the product that NASCAR is seeking on the road courses. It was fine. Yeah, I just don't, you know, I don't know if it was super compelling. You had a great battle at the end there. Christopher Bell trying to track down William Byron from over 12 seconds back, almost got there. That's good. But again, you know, I don't know. It was fine. I don't know. I didn't love it. What about you?
It's weird. It was a fine race in terms of it was a very natural race. And we talk about that a lot on this show of how some of these times these races don't feel like the deserving winner. You know, each week on The Athletic, you talk about the fastest car win, the driver with the fastest car win. And I don't think you can, from a purist standpoint, this is what you kind of want to see. It's not much dissimilar from what you saw at Bristol, where it was like a driver's race, right? This was, in a lot of respects, a driver's race where you didn't make mistakes, you stay out of trouble, you work your way up there, you didn't have a lot of cautions, you didn't have a lot of craziness, you had strategy, you know, when to pit, when not to pit, you had undercuts and overcuts and all of these different elements that I think we are kind of in the same camp of, like, we like this sometimes. It's a nice change of pace on road courses, you know. But there's also something to be said for, this isn't why road courses became so popular in NASCAR. Road courses in NASCAR, and I say this all the time, became popular because they were quote-unquote the new short tracks. And you had the rough and tumble and throwing bumpers and slamming guys out of the way and 3-4 wide restarts and that kind of thing that really made it, I mean, it was basically taking what you see in Australia in the supercars, which people love, and bringing it over here. And that is why we have so many road courses now, you know? And this was not, if we've had an abundance of these races before the schedule was changed a few years ago, I don't think you'd have the number of road courses you'd have on the schedule. They'd be like, this is fine. This is kind of how it was back in the day when you'd go to Sonoma or Watkins Glen for a long time. Whether that's good or bad or not depends on what you're looking for. I mean, I wasn't offended by today's race. I just didn't think it was all that exciting. The last 10 laps or so were fine. It was interesting. But overall, I don't think you could watch this race and be like, oh my God, that was, I liked what I saw today, you know, especially after everything we've seen the last few weeks. So it's kind of one of those things, it was a race. And, you know, it wasn't like last year, but I wasn't as offended by last year as you were, but I understand. But like you said, a happy medium is probably somewhere there we need to find.
NASCAR would probably point to this race today and say, see, this is why we brought back stage breaks and cautions, you know? I guess that's probably a valid point, but I don't really know that changed anything about the race. Would it have gone caution free? I don't know. You don't really know if somebody would have tried running long or I who knows, right? But maybe it does. Maybe it does. I mean, this is, you know, talking to drivers afterwards, you know, the point has been made that even though there was a lot of cautions here last year, the race took like 45 minutes longer, I think, last year. I think it was John Newby that posted that. I want to give credit where I saw it. But you know, this is a very, very wide track. There's tons of runoff. If you make a mistake, if you spin out, you're not hitting a wall like a street course. You're not going into the gravel traps for the most part. I mean, there are some, but people have escaped them. And you know, there's a lot of room for error. And especially, you know, when you go wide into these huge paved areas and you're racing over there, people are all over the place. So, you know, Tyler Reddick was saying after the race, I mean, this is the fourth time now that the Cup drivers have been on this track. They're much more used to it than they were the first couple years, right? And, you know, also a lot of the Cup drivers, too, have come out for various, you know, it's not NASCAR-sanctioned stuff here, but, you know, other races that, you know, they can come out and run legally. So they have a lot more laps at this place now, and they're good. I mean, think about this, for instance, right? You talk about the track limits thing, and people were so mad about that. Rightfully so, I think, you know, in terms of the harsh penalties that come with that for cutting the S's, right? But, and we thought it was going to be a big thing today, because I think there was, what, 37 in the Xfinity race or something crazy between trucks and Xfinity?
Yeah, some crazy number.
Yeah.
Only four today.
Yeah, like the drivers today, I mean, the Cup drivers are really, really, really good. And even when they make mistakes, they're not, for the most part, going off course to cut the S's. And you could tell, I mean, NASCAR, Chase Elliott made that mistake at one point. And, you know, his team's going, well, he got loose. You know, he was trying to save it. And so he had to go through the S's. But for the most part, guys weren't doing that. And it just speaks to the talent level. So when you're talking about why aren't there cautions and things like that, it's because they're good. And once they get spread out, Rudy Fugel said, nah, this didn't really surprise me because after the first, second, third, fourth lap of a run, after the restart, where's the opportunities for cautions coming from? You saw many people spin, but not enough to cause a full course yellow. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, are you surprised there wasn't more cautions?
No, because you're right when you say this is a track where the walls aren't on top of them. This isn't like Watkins Glen where the walls are right there and we've seen big accidents happen. This is a very forgiving racetrack where you can have issues and not bounce into a wall or a competitor or something of that nature. And I think it's also worth stating is that this is a really big track, which means you're not in traffic. Like I don't have the number is two or I mean, just the vast majority of the field today finished on lead lap. And so you aren't having to manage traffic. You aren't having to work through traffic. Sonoma, is a much shorter road course. Watkins Glen is bigger, but not significantly bigger. To me, you mentioned Road America in 2022. Well, what is Road America? Road America is kind of the same way in a lot of respects. It's a 4-mile track, very big. Now there, it's a little bit more unforgiving because you have, you know, the walls are closer, that kind of thing, but you do have more room for forgiveness there. That race played out much like this one did. So I feel like when you come to these big tracks and you aren't in traffic, you aren't having to race through guys, you have a lot of passing opportunities, you're not going to be in a situation where you're going to see a lot of cautions, you know, and it's the old cliche of cautions breed cautions. Now, if we would have got a caution with about 10, 15 laps to go today? Would that kind of started the cycle? I think so, because at that point everybody's bunched up and it's money time, but it never happened. And so big track, you've got a lot of room for error, no traffic. You throw all of these things together, this is what happens. And again, this is road course racing. This today is a road course race. This is what you see a lot of times when you watch road course races. Whether that's good or bad or not is up to you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very fair point. I think that's very accurate. And when you do see races like that, a lot of times it comes down to the little things. And I think that's where you saw this race decided, right? Christopher Bell went on a two-stop strategy. And arguably, I mean, did he have the faster car? Was he faster than Byron? I mean, he tracked him down from 12 seconds. And you could say, well, he had slightly fresher tires. Let's see, he had four-lap fresher tires. So you could say that that made somewhat of a difference, but was that the whole difference to come back from over 12 seconds down and almost win the race? I mean, I might argue Bell had the fastest car, but after he won stage one and stayed out, he decided to, you know, play a different strategy, right? And that ultimately got him buried. You know, he did have a really, really long pit stop because they had to take fuel and wait for it. I don't know if that – I never checked if that was like – some sort of, you know, they had problem getting the fuel in to start. You know, you could just see the end of the stop. It took a really, really long time. I think 19 and a half second pit stop. Or maybe he was just almost out because he had run it so long. So that's why he had to wait longer. But he pretty much was trying to overcome that track position wise for the rest of the time and almost got back up there, but it didn't quite work out. He said afterwards that they just thought there'd be a caution.
Yeah.
And look, if there's a caution after that point, he probably wins, right? Because if he is faster and he gets a restart and that allows him to catch back up, he's gone.
Yeah.
So that was a big difference maker for him.
Here's a question for you. Should his teammate, Ty Gibbs, let him go sooner? Because if Ty Gibbs lets him go a lap or so sooner, Bell wins that race. Joe Gibbs Racing wins that race.
I don't think so.
Why?
Not when you're... I mean, Ty Gibbs is just as much in contention at that point.
I get that. Like, you're in contention, but Ty Gibbs wasn't probably going to catch Byron at that point. It was pretty obvious. So if you're Ty Gibbs, you're like, okay, I'm not going to be able to catch him, but my teammate sure as heck can. And if he catches him, there's a chance that these guys get together. We see this happen here. We saw it yesterday in the Xfinity Series race where something happens on the last lap and it opens the door. I would argue that it probably better positioned Ty Gibbs to maybe get a win that he otherwise wasn't going to get because he wasn't going to catch Byron. So if you let Bell go, Bell goes and hunts down Byron, at least you've got a puncher's chance then.
I would disagree just in the fact that, look, you're running second, and if a caution does come out late, somebody, you know, has used up their tires, slides off track or something, you are now coming into these pit stops second, or if you're not going to pit, you have, you know, second choice on the choose, you know, where you want to start. Do you want to take the front row, or do you want to start inside the leader, you know, inside behind the leader, whatever. Whereas is if you've just given that to teammate a position, you might be kicking yourself. I understand where you're coming from, but when you're second like that, I mean, especially look, here's another thing. Okay, let's say you're P2 right there, right? And Byron makes a mistake, spins off course. Well, all of a sudden you inherit the lead. You know, so I just don't think you can be like, yeah, you know what, teammate, you're faster. Go ahead. Like, I'd be more of along the lines of, hey, you want it? Pass me. If you're faster, pass me. You know,
you're that way. You're kind of selfish sometimes. I get that.
I'd be interested to hear what other people have to say about it. But I mean, you raise a good argument. I just don't think in that position, this is not F1 where you say, hey, let the faster guy through to have a better shot. That's just not really how the racing goes here. You don't know what's going to happen. I wouldn't give it up because I feel like Ty Gibbs has a shot at his first win still. And I don't know. I
get it. I can make either point. I could see to either side, but I think it's undeniable though that Bell would have gotten by Gibbs at least one, maybe two laps sooner, that he's all over Byron. And then who knows from there.
I guess. Well, why does Gibbs owe Bell that favor, I guess. Of
their teammates. I'd rather have my teammate win the race than a Chevy.
Yeah. Well, sure, but I mean, there's no guarantee either way. And then, I don't know. I mean, it's you raise a good argument. I just don't know what the answer is. Personally, I don't have a problem with what.
No, I mean, I'm not offended. I'm not upset, but I'm just curious by it. I looked at that and I was like, once he cleared Gibbs, it was like he set sail and he was gone. And it was like, man, to me, it's like in my head, if I'm running Joe Gibbs Racing and I'm watching this, I'm like, maybe we should have done something a little sooner, you know. And it's not uncommon where teammates do each other favors for each other, you know. Now, maybe not exactly these circumstances, but it's not completely out of line.
Well, we talked about little things there that could add up. Bell only ends up losing by 0.7 seconds. But, two other drivers in the top five were also saying that they thought little things in what was essentially a caution-free race, natural caution anyway, also hurt them. So Bowman was essentially saying that basically when he came off pit road there, he kind of got stuck briefly behind some of the slower cars who I think hadn't made their pit stop yet. I'm trying to paraphrase what he said. Yeah. And so he felt like he burned his tires off those first couple laps, still when the air pressures were a little bit low. He kind of hurt his tires a little bit trying to pass them. And then that really hurt him later in the run with no cautions, coming out. Unfortunately for him, he just didn't have enough to go up there and hang with Byron. And then Tyler Reddick, who came into the race as the favorite, he had a strong car at times. He wasn't sure where they really missed it, but he kind of felt like he didn't do a good enough job like on pit road, getting on and off pit road. He said he was maybe being a little bit conservative because there's such a big penalty. Had he gotten a speeding penalty, your race is ruined, right? Especially if there's not going to be any cautions. So he felt like maybe, just that little bit. I think one of them was like toward the end of stage two, getting on and off pit road. He felt like it was a little bit slow, and maybe that adds up to just enough track position that you don't get up there late. He wasn't really sure. He wasn't saying he didn't win because of that, but that could have cost him a few positions. But that's the kind of thing that this race comes down to, right? It's the fine margins when it's the course of a long run and people are getting spread out and track position matters. And the leader, once you have that clean air, Byron seemed to really manage his gap for a long time until he really had to go at the end.
Well, let me throw another name on that list. Ross Chastain, who was leading at the time he came into his last pit stop or first or second, I think he was leading at the time. And he had the slow stop. I think they got hung up on the left rear. And he came out well behind Byron there because they pitted at the same time. And Bowman. And Bowman passed him, but he came out on pit road like right behind, you could see the gap. They went from like he and Byron went from running nose to tail to a huge gap. And that he never got it back either. So, yeah, I mean, little things matter in this race. And you look up and down the order today, in the top 10 alone, Kyle Busch had issues today. Martin Truex Jr. had to overcome some things. Blaney, finished in the top 15, but he had his problems. Like, a lot of guys had problems today, and they had to overcome.
Well, you mentioned Kyle Busch. He was not happy with the second-place driver, Christopher Bell, who spun out both Kyles in the race. I missed that whole thing because I went down. So, you always have to pick, right? What you're going to do after the race. And I thought, well, the top 10 guys, they were sending them down to one end of pit road. And I just thought if there's going to be any action, it's going to be maybe down toward the other end of the guys who were mad about their finish or whatever. So I opted for the other way. And, it turned out the one confrontation was in the top 10 because Kyle Busch, NASCAR social captured it very well, and it looks like Fox as well, but Kyle Busch marched right down to Christopher Bell and it looked like he was sort of saying like, that's not two, that's three or something. He looked like he was telling him the score.
Yeah.
Is that what you interpreted it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, last year in this race, Bell got into Kyle and spun him out. Now, wasn't, whether it's intentional or not, it was racing, but Bell made contact with Kyle spun. And so I that was my interpretation of he was like, he's keeping score of this,
It looked like, I mean, I need to go back and watch, but it looked, didn't he look like he had three, like he had three incidents? No,
I thought he said two. I thought he said two. That's two. So that was my interpretation. He said two, and as in last year and then this year. So yes, he said this is two. There won't be a third or something of that nature.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. So, yeah. Anyway, Kyle was,
and then it sounded like he was going to go for payback or, but.
Yeah, he did say like he's got one coming to him. That was Kyle had that walk and that look to him. I was like, oh.
It looked like my video of when he was walking toward Logano.
Yes.
When the NASCAR, the alternate angle that NASCAR posted on their social media where they're following him and he's, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. But,
you know, he doesn't, I mean, those former teammates, first of all, it's also, you have to remember, like, even with the dirt racing stuff, there's a connection there. Kyle and Brexen, I think, I believe, have raced in Bell's Micromania event at Texas Motor Speedway. They are not.
Bell used to drive for him.
Yes, they're not. They're not enemies. You know what I'm saying, though. Like, now, will it get worked out? Can you talk? Can you talk Kyle Busch down from that and say, "Hey, man, I'm sorry, it's an accident." I think in Kyle Busch's mind, when he's been wrong twice, I don't know that you can. You know, just move on. I think that maybe you do get spun out first or something before he feels the score is settled. I don't know that you can just talk your way out of that. Obviously, Bell's expression on his face was, dang it, I do not want to be in this situation. I do not want to be in this conversation. This is not what I intended. Right? And you know Bell's not going in there trying to spin Kyle Busch out on purpose. You know,
no, but obviously, he can be aggressive at times, though.
And yeah, but that wasn't, he's not going in there like, I'm going to.
No,
I
wasn't
see it that way.
He went in there hard though, and like
okay. Well, I mean, look, I feel like it was a mistake, but
yeah. Like, I don't think he did it intentionally. I don't think he was going there, but I just think when you, I guess my point is when you go into a corner hard like that, like you kind of open up the door, like bad things can happen, and you know maybe it doesn't matter. I don't know, but yeah, Bell had that 1,000-yard stare of oh boy.
Yeah, just like this is.
Yeah, and that's not Bell. Like, Bell's really mild-mannered, and he's not going to go looking for a fight. And he is not somebody who's going to intentionally spin people out. That's just not his MO. He is a clean driver. He is a aggressive driver, but he is not somebody who's going to go crash somebody. And Kyle, you know, two years in a row, he gets spun out by the same guy. I think you probably got to add in the fact that it's been a frustrating start to the year. And they've had fast race cars, but they haven't had the finishes to correspond with that necessarily and everything else. And it's like, you could kind of see like maybe it was just, you know, this was more to it than that.
Well, and Kyle Busch, I believe, was running fifth when that happened because Chase Elliott had just gotten his deal. I think that was right when his course cutting penalty happened for Elliott maybe. And then Kyle Busch had inherited fifth. And, you know, Kyle ends up coming back to finish ninth, but you know, he is 13th in the standings. He actually gained three spots today. So, I mean, he salvaged a day, but you know, obviously he wanted a top five and thought, you know, he would have maybe a shot at, I mean, look, there's no caution. So it's not like he was going to be able to race up there, but still you don't want to be spun out. So,
no.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot that went on today. Other than that, you know, the LaJoy incident with Truex and Bubba at the start was really weird. You don't really see, it was like LaJoy, it looked like it was coming across Truex, and the way he hit turned Truex just enough to hit Bubba, and then those two cars go like boop, like hit each other in front of Truex. You don't see that very often. That was just a weird sequence there, but yeah, that happens right away, obviously, and but again, not a caution. I mean, there had to be. I mean, Keselowski spun twice. Gregson spun right in front of Byron at the end there when he was trying to be lapped or trying not to get lapped, I guess. I think Priest spun at one point. Barry might have spun at one point.
Mm-hmm. Barry got into the 50 and spun him. The 50 spun twice.
He spun, off Stenhouse. Twice, Stenhouse got Kobayashi at the Indy Road Course last year. Mm-hmm. And I hope
got him again today.
I hope he doesn't mind sharing this, but Bozy was at the tweet up today, and he was saying that sort of the after Kobayashi got ran over at Indy by Stenhouse, he said that it sort of went out to the sports car world, like, hey, if you guys are going to race in NASCAR, you got to give it back. Like all the sports car racers started stepping up after that, going, all right, we're going to come over, but we're going to go hard. Like, and so it was interesting to see Stenhouse get into Kobayashi again. I'm trying to think of who else spun, but anyway, there's no cautions for those.
No, there wasn't. But that's part of it though, too. Big track, you know, you got a lot of area. So you get into guys, they spin, they're not hitting anything. They're not bouncing off anything and people are getting spread out. So they're not, other cars aren't necessarily coming by. It reminded me of your comments that you make, which is interesting, kind of remind me to go back to this race a year ago when you had Jordan Taylor and Jensen Button. And I feel like I'm leaving somebody else out and I apologize, but both of those guys were like, they jumped in the deep end and they're like, whoa, these guys are aggressive and not afraid to shove people around. So yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that honestly that message didn't get out to people a little sooner.
Yeah.
These NASCAR guys are, they're not afraid to shove you around a little bit, but, have you not watched these races the last, 15 years, but, it'd be interesting.
Well, before we go any further, definitely want to let you guys know about the deal that The Athletic's running right now for one more week. So you got to jump on this while you can if you want to be a new subscriber and only have to pay $1 a month for the first year. So $12 for an entire year. You can see all our coverage in addition to every sport that The Athletic has. And obviously it's in the middle of March Madness right now. You've got baseball season starting up. Pretty soon you're going to have playoffs for hockey, basketball, all that good stuff. So you can subscribe by going to any of our articles at theathletic.com/NASCAR. You will see all our stuff there. Pick an article, click the link, and you should be prompted with the deal. One of those articles this week that Jordan wrote was the news that NASCAR will be going to Bowman Gray Stadium, where that is a place where we would not see a race without natural cautions, I'm pretty sure.
No.
What do you make of that news real quick before we go back to talking about COTA?
I think it's a couple things. One, I think it's really good of NASCAR the Bowman's Gray future wasn't in doubt. It's not like the track was losing money or anything like that. But for NASCAR, and it wasn't like NASCAR didn't have ties because they still were the sanctioning body, they still sanction races there. But for them to come in directly and kind of take over operations, I think speaks to the fact that this is an important track to them. It matters to them. Continuing to keep this short track around and thriving is important in an environment when short tracks across the country are struggling. Many of them are closing their doors. And so while the contract runs through 2050, you know how these things go. If the tracks are losing money, it doesn't take long before other things, developers come in and want to do things. I think NASCAR taking this over is a really good thing. This track means something to the family for a lot of reasons, which I talked to Ben Kennedy in that article in depth about it. It matters to them personally and professionally. Big picture, it's going to be interesting to see what happens to this. I mean, there's been Bowman Gray's been floated around about a possibility of, could it be the All-Star race? Could it be the Clash? Could there be a National Series race there? And so when I talked to Ben, I asked him that question straight up. And I thought he gave a really interesting answer. Is he didn't dance around it and did give the cliche of, we'll see. It was we've talked about it. We've thought about it. We've kind of, it's in our, as we coming up with these grand plans and the schedule, it's something that we've considered, but there's nothing afoot. But I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be shocked if NASCAR on the National Series level in some capacity is racing there in the relatively near future. I believe.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly seems that would set the stage to do that, right?
Yep.
You could take the All-Star race there. I don't know how that affects the rest of the schedule, but I mean, certainly that's a place that, in terms of an All-Star race, an exhibition, not having to make All-Star live pit there. Stops, we've both gone to see races at Bowman Gray. I'm sure a lot of you have, and that would certainly be a slam bang kind of place.
It's magical, man. Like in NASCAR's, there's been this conversation in NASCAR the last few years about kind of having that Field of Dreams-esque race on the schedule. Like, baseball goes and plays in the Iowa cornfield. And Bowman Gray's name has been floated for that. Like that would certainly be the harken back to the short track roots, kind of like we do in North Wilkesboro last year.
it would certainly get people excited. You know, you're going to, what you saw at North Wilkesboro last year is not going to happen in Bowling Gray. I'll tell you that right now. You know, there's just a lot of possibilities, and it's interesting to see what that is. It doesn't hold many people. I mean, for a national series level, it's 17,000 people. I don't know if you can expand or not. I don't think you can. But I think the possibilities there, certainly, I think it's a good move. And I'm frankly glad to see it, because I think Bowman Gray is one of those treasures that you need to maintain.
My only hesitation here is, you know, there was a big push for a while to not have so many races in one area, right? Mm-hmm. And that cost Rockingham. That cost mm-hmm. Darlington a date at one point. It cost Atlanta a date at one point. Obviously, North Wilkesboro fell off the schedule completely. There's never been a race, you know, in modern times at Bowman Gray and stuff. But, like, the point is, that's a lot around mm-hmm. the Charlotte area within a few hours. A lot. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is probably more of a TV product than ever, and it's great to have some of these historic places, but if you are going to make these your new tracks, like, oh, we've added North Wilkesboro, it's back, yay, that's great, but if it's like, okay, now we're going to put Bowman Gray on, okay, well, where's that coming from? If you ever want to put Rockingham back on, where's that coming mm-hmm. from? I don't really want to see, like, retraction, I guess, from the national. Like, there's still areas of the country where you really need to get to. It's very, very hard to do that because nobody seems to be building new tracks these days, but just sort of contracting to the southeast, I guess. I don't know why I said retraction. I guess it should be contraction. But Nate Ryan, if you're listening, is probably shaming me.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, it's just... I don't know. Like, I'm worried, a little bit worried about that, but I'm also not like, oh, they shouldn't go there. I mean, no, they should, but just,
yeah, you got to do it smart.
The balance is seemingly tipping a little bit, is what I'd be worried about.
I would agree. We talked about in this podcast a week ago where you've got three races at Martinsville, Richmond, and Bristol, which are close proximity together, that run within a few weeks of each other. And we talk about attendance and things, and does that chip away? And, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of things you can do with this schedule. Like, and this is just me talking, I'm not reporting this or anything like that, but is it a thing of, hey, we're not going to go to North Wilkesboro every year. You know, we're going to have this rotation of all-star races, which has been discussed, and we're going to go to a Bowman Gray. We're going to go to a North Wilkesboro. We're going to go to a pick a short track somewhere. You know, we're going to kind of do this. That would seem to alleviate that concern, which I think is very valid. It's oversaturation. If you can go to a race, I mean, I think a lot of people are going to pick Bowman Gray over a lot of them, right? And so I think that's a concern, and you have to be smart about how you do it. It's going to be fascinating to see how this works out, and I think we're going to probably get into this conversation a little bit too today, but there's some decisions to make about the schedule for next year, about COTA, about North Wilkesboro and their places on there, and to see how this all comes together. NASCAR has said, like, we are this new NASCAR of, hey, we're going to go to a market for 2 or 3 years, and then we're going to go away, and then we're going to come back. So that could fit part of that too. And that way the novelty doesn't wear off. You're not going to a Bowman Gray or North Wilkesboro every year. You're going there every 3, 4, 5 years. You're like, oh, okay, that's cool. So I don't know. I think there's a way. I 100% agree with you. And it's an issue you have to be concerned about. I think there is a way to alleviate that.
Yeah. I mean, within the Charlotte area, within 3.5 hours, you have almost probably, what, 10 races off the top of my head? I mean,
2 at Martinsville, 2 at Richmond, 2 at Bristol, 2 at Darlington, 2 at Charlotte, North Wilkesboro. I would even throw Atlanta in there, which is about, depending on 4 hours, you live, yeah. You know, so there's 2 there. Yeah, I mean, that's just off the top of my head.
Yeah, and that's you know, quite a lot. Now, here in Texas, you know, part of the conversation was, all right, COTA, I believe we're 3 hours here in Austin away from the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And the Texas race, Texas down to one date now, obviously. Texas now has lost its playoff date, is now in the spring. It's coming up in 3 weeks. So Texas has 2 races in 3 weeks that are 3 hours apart. And obviously, you know, SMI at least promotes this race and then owns Texas. they would like to have those races farther apart, but as it is, that didn't happen like this. So I don't know what you do about that, but again, there's sort of scheduling issues. I mean, I feel like even though this wasn't the best race today, I don't want to see them drop Coda from the schedule. I mean, mm-hmm. every driver you talk to, and I'll have more about this in The Athletic. I have a lot of their comments, but you know, I didn't hear anybody say, I don't want to come back here. Like mm-hmm. people love coming to Austin mm-hmm. and they love this track. The drivers mm-hmm. love this track. It's one of the best road courses, you know, I think in the world is in terms of like flowing natural road courses. It's, you know, it's very different at times. You know, there's different sections. It has sort of like a, you know, different elements of it on different parts of the track, and it tests each sort of road racing skill that you have. And it's just very cool. It's not like a street race kind of thing. It's not like a Roval where it's just, you know, man-made and they tried to force something. I mean, man-made. Yes, it's man-made. But, you know, it's natural terrain, right? Like,
and Nate's going to kill you, by the way.
Yeah. But listen, I mean, it's a cool place. The drivers love it. And I don't think that the racing, I don't think the track is the problem. Obviously, the cars, the next-gen cars, as we've talked about over and over again on road courses, race too well in some instances. And, you know, the tire, again, we didn't talk about the tires yet, but it was sort of the opposite of Bristol last week, where the tires didn't really make that much of a difference. You could say maybe a little bit, again, based on Bell having four-lap fresher tires, but it wasn't like there was huge wear, and if you had to pay a huge penalty for, you know, burning up your tires too much, right? Like, and you would fall off. I mean, you had guys stay out for that reason early in the race. So, you know, if you get the car, and I don't know what you do at this point, right? Because it was already a new package. So I don't know if you can get the tires better. I don't know what you would do again, but I don't think the track's a problem. I'd like to see them keep coming back here. Do you think they will keep coming back here?
I have no indication that they won't. Let me say that.
It sounds like they will. So.
Yeah, like yeah, I feel like we would have heard something, you know, us, you know, we're real plugged in, Jeff. Let's just toot our own horn here, right?
Speak for yourself.
Oh, you're plugged in. Stop. I just feel like we would have heard some conversation about this. There's usually an undercurrent on these things, and there doesn't seem to be any undercurrent. And I think for all the reasons you mentioned, Austin's a great city. It's important to have Texas is really a giant state. It's important to have two races down there. And I think the fact that you've got I understand they're 3.5 hours apart, but you've got an oval, you've got a road course. They're two different beasts. I think you can, you know, they serve two different purposes. So, it is we went over the reasons about Coda. They are what they are. I think the track is part of it. You can't solve that part of it, but when you make the point and you are right, there's also, when you step back and look at the landscape of road courses in NASCAR, Sonoma, Watkins Glen last year, the Roval, like, this is not just a Coda thing. This is a
Indy road course.
Indy road course. Yeah. I mean, I thought that was really good at the end. But I mean, again, like largely though, like we're seeing this everywhere where there's not a lot of contact. The guys aren't spinning out. They aren't causing crashes. They're not slamming into each other and they're not getting angry. They're not doing all of the things that have become synonymous with road course racing and NASCAR. And so is that a car thing? Well, it seems to be the case, because if you go back a few years, we were getting that, you know, and road courses up until 2022 were phenomenal. And there's a reason why they're on the schedule as much as they are. If you can figure that out, this is too good of a market. This is too good of a destination. And by all accounts, everything I've heard, and you know, you were there, I've heard the crowd's been good. The crowds have been good. And so, like, there aren't the telltale signs of this isn't working, we're done here. We've tapped this out. We'll come back later down the road. Like, no, this by all accounts, everybody seems pretty pleased with this.
I mean, the other thing is like the facility is world class. You know, it's maybe the nicest racetrack in America. You know, it's just, you know, and I think there's some value there in this being the one race that NASCAR, you know, and F1, the one track that they both race on. You know, I think that's kind of cool.
Well, for now,
why?
Maybe you never know. I mean, we've talked about Mexico, right?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, you know, I just, you know, that there's some, there's a neat little crossover, and, you know, it's, I think it's too good to be like, all right, let's just give up on it. Now, I know, again, you people probably watch the race today and they're like, why would you say that? But I, again, as you laid out perfectly, Watkins Glen last year, one caution, and the only reason was because Chase Elliott ran out of fuel, right, with the strategy that the Hail Mary that they were trying to do to make the playoffs. You know, Indy Road Course, that was, I thought that was a great race with McDowell and all that stuff, but that only had one caution also. So when you get a race today with no natural cautions, you know, it's it's the car. It, you know, it's not wheel hopping. So people aren't making mistakes. These guys are really good, really, really good. So let's talk about track limits a little bit.
Oh boy.
So look, I do think that NASCAR's got to officiate this a different way. I mean, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, it seems very kneecapping to penalize somebody, make them come down pit road, and have to do that for a track limits thing. I feel like there's a different way to do that, whether it's a stop and go, like they stop immediately and then they proceed, and then you don't have to come down pit road. I don't know. Maybe it's a warning system, like you get one, and if you do two, then, you know, an escalating thing. I don't know, but... penalizing them by coming down pit road just seems like that's such a debilitating way to penalize somebody, especially in a race where there's so few cautions.
So let's back up and try to figure out how we've gotten to this point, right? Because at most road courses in NASCAR, there's no track limits violations. You can race wherever you want, right? You can go wide, whatever it is. And that is the case for most of this course as well. You can race all over the place. You can go turn 19 way, way off, right? Coming around turn 20, you don't have to, it's not like F1 where you've got to stay within the white line. But obviously there's S's here that if you did not police that, you could basically drive straight through, and that would be a massive advantage to not have to do the S's at all. You just drive straight essentially, right? So they have to police it in some way. Now, what do they do? Well, they don't seem to want to make two different penalties, right? Because it's one thing to go, I'm just going to like completely shortcut the course and gain a massive advantage here, which that should be the kind of penalty we're talking about, a pass-through penalty, or if it was at the end of the race, a 30-second penalty.
Like we saw with Chase Briscoe.
Well, and Shane Van Gisbergen just in the Xfinity race just yesterday, right?
Yep.
But you're talking about an Indy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is worth penalizing, right? But there's also the, you know, if you barely go off while you're racing somebody, or if you didn't gain an advantage, and then you are getting a massive penalty in, you know, on the first violation with no warning, that's, it just feels heavy-handed, and it's not really how the other motorsports series around the world do things, right? Like I asked our coworker Madeline Coleman, who covers F1, obviously, just to refresh my memory, what exactly are the rules for F1? It sounds like it's the fourth violation, right? So you get two heads up, you get two warnings, then you get a black and white flag, which is another warning for the third violation, and the fourth is where you get potentially a 5-second penalty, and often it comes down to whether they leave the track and gain an advantage. That is something too, where, you know, in F1 you see, hey, you have to give the spot back, right? And that actually seems reasonable here, where instead of having to look, oh, okay, you went this much outside the, you know, your four tires over the line or whatever, if you gained an advantage doing that, you give that spot back, right? And you know, you talked about a spot and go or a stop and go. I did run that by somebody from NASCAR, and their thing was, well, there's not really a place on this track to do that. Like at the Roval, you know, you can do it on the front stretch or whatever, by the chicane, and you keep going after you do that. This track might, and I don't know, maybe they could find a place to do it. Maybe it's not so obvious, but you know, like Shane Van Gisbergen, and we'll talk about the end of the Xfinity race and stuff too, but Van Gisbergen, you know, great racing at the end there with Austin Hill and Kyle Larson. And, you know, he's going to end up finishing second. And then he gets a 30-second penalty because he couldn't serve the pass-through. And he gets dropped down to, what, 27th or whatever. Like, And that was the first time he had gone off track all day while racing on the last lap for position. I mean, 5 second penalty maybe, or drop him down to third for gaining an advantage at that point. But to drop him down to 27th for that is, that's no, that, that it's, just doesn't seem right.
It's ticky tacky. I don't know how else to say it. Like, I feel bad. I mean, I agree with you. Like, you want guys to go all out racing for the win. And when something happens like that, it's a mistake, sure, but should it knock them down farther running order? Because if you look at it, it actually knocked him out of the provisional playoff spot because he was 20-some points, whatever it was, and I think he's 18 out now if I looked at the numbers correctly. And so he would have been in the playoffs. But that's, you know, that could potentially be costly. So I don't like it. I like that idea of, you know, maybe you accumulate these and you know, if your third offense, your fourth offense, that's when you serve it. And I feel like today's a good example of Chase Elliott. Like, you're going through there, he gets really loose, wrecking loose, and saves it. Good kudos to him. And he goes out. Like, he already was kind of, if you make the case, you could already say he was already penalized enough. Like, he lost all his momentum, had to slow down. Like, that's a penalty enough. And now you're throwing on top of that, you're throwing a stop and, you know, coming down pit road. It's hard. I just feel like there needs to be a little bit of leeway there. And I hate, excuse me, I'm somebody who is very black or white. Like, I don't want officials to making rules of gray calls. It'll stick, keep the officials out of it. But like, in this instance, I would say I almost want officials to be more involved and to make those calls and be like, yeah, let's just not ruin somebody's day because of one thing that may or may not have been incidental. Because we've seen guys go through there too and have contact with somebody and they're pushed out. And it's like, well, wait a second.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, the Chase Elliott thing today is the shining example of this, right? Because it just seems more logical to go, all right, he made a mistake. He got loose. And if he did gain a, if he was judged to have gained a position there, just give it back. Didn't they used to, they've changed the policy now, but didn't that used to be part of the yellow line rule back in the day that you could give it back? That, I don't, you know, that hasn't been a thing for a long time, but that used to be like, okay, he went below the yellow line, but he gave it back or whatever at Daytona or Talladega, right? I believe back, you know, 15 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
So that just seems like a more reasonable thing. And then also NASCAR doesn't have to judge every single incident. It's just whether, you know, did they get a spot doing that? Now, again, if somebody's going to go through there on the last lap and pull the equivalent of like a Hail Melon of cutting the S's and just go straight through it, okay, logic says again, no, you can't do
then
that.
You
we
step
will officiate
in.
That too. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I hope that they change this soon because it just seemed to irritate so many people and it became a talking point for the weekend and it was like a distraction from, and it was unnecessary. It didn't need to be a thing.
I remember at Sonoma, there was a thing too of, I forgot what corner it was, but if like you missed a corner or something, you had to stop and you stopped, served your penalty, go. You know, you did that at Watkins Glen too, if you blew the bus stop, right? And so you had those moments. So it's not, like, this has been done. And there, to the best of my memory, it wasn't like a safety thing that changed this. Of like, you had guys stopping on the track and it was causing accidents or anything like that. There's a, you know, COTA's a big enough track. Like, if you can do this in the Roval, I feel like you can find a place at Sonoma, or find a place at COTA to serve your penalty, you know, wherever that is. Or even it's a time thing. You know, you just add 5 seconds. Or, I'll say this, or you say, hey, when you come down pit road, you're going to hold you for 3 seconds or whatever that is. You know, I just feel like there's a different way. I'm not saying, again, you don't want guys who do this egregiously and do this intentionally should be penalized. And I think NASCAR would step in at that point. But for something like this, I just don't feel like you need to kneecap somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you.
Oh, look at that. It doesn't happen often.
Well, if you're going to agree with us on something else, you should agree that FanDuel is the way to go right now, Jordan, because I know you live in North Carolina, and this is the big time that FanDuel has come in there. So, you know, listen, if your bracket is busted, I don't know how yours is doing, but it's good news for you, because you can just bet on every game of the tourney. You don't have to worry about your bracket. It's not over for you. Whether you're betting on a big upset or number one seed, it's time to go dancing on America's number one sports book. You know, honestly, that is, I think, the way to go in general, because, you know, you look at your brackets now, and I mean, is yours destroyed? Are you doing
it? Yeah, it's a dumpster fire.
Yeah. I think I'm like in 22nd place already in the pool that I'm in. And
out of 20 seconds, like, under 22 people?
It's in the 20s, I think. So, you know, it just, I don't want to just give up on the whole tournament and not watch any more March Madness, but I still want to make it interesting. So,
yeah.
That's where FanDuel can come in. You can bet on everything from the money line to over unders to which team will cut down the nets, all on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. You can take the court right now with $200 in bonus bets, win or lose, when you place your first $5 bet. So go to FanDuel.com to get started. And that is FanDuel, America's number one sports book. You must be 21 plus and present in North Carolina. First online real money wager only. A $10 deposit is required. Bonus is issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. If you have a gambling problem, call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. I think we were talking about track limits a little bit, and also wanted to just talk about the end of the Xfinity race there in general, because SVG, oof, Allmendinger, Larson,
so good, Gibbs.
I mean, it was a great, that Xfinity race was stacked.
And so good.
Austin Hill was in the mix as well. Now I got to tell you, I'll just come out and say it. I just disagree with where Austin Hill was coming from on this. You know, SVG is the leader. His spotter is telling him protect, protect, protect. Do not let somebody put you three wide on this restart. Right. Austin Hill sees that he's not going to be able to go inside going in turn one. And it seems like he nudges him, you know, bumps him a couple times. Now, did he push him all the way through turn one? No, but he did enough that he got him out of the way. And to me, that is bump and run territory, my friends. That is whatever you want to call, oh, I didn't, you know, I hit him at the start finish line, I laid off, whatever. But once that happens, you have now opened the door, right? And you better hope that SVG doesn't get back to you. Because I would expect if he does, you are going to get moved in a similar way. Not wrecked, but moved. And to me, that is essentially what happened. SVG got back to him. And yeah, he made contact. It was somewhat heavy. But they still finished second and third. It cost them both the win, essentially. Larson got to them and passed them on fresher tires. But then, you know, afterwards, Austin Hill's like, you know, sort of crying foul about this and saying that that was not a fair thing. He didn't even, you know, give us a chance. But I was like, I mean, I even tweeted it as soon as it happened. Like, okay, now here it's game on here. This, as far as I understand the driver code, I just felt like Austin Hill didn't really have a case there. Am I off base? What do you think?
No, I agree with you. I mean, when you do it to somebody, you have to expect that it's going to be done to you, but it is also one of those things of I'm for the code when it works in my advantage, but when it goes against me, I don't believe in the code, you know? And so it's kind of where you were at that time of, oh, I'm for the code because I'm going to shove him out of the way because we're racing hard, but you know, that's part of it. That's racing, right? Last lap going for the win. Well, but no, he can't do that to me. Why not? Because that's not fair. Well, wait a second. Like, that's just part of it. I mean, that's natural life of, you know, people. A lot of people are like, whatever works best for me at the time is what I want. So I agree with you, though. Like, once you open that door, you got one coming back to you. And it wasn't like you got dumped. You know, you got shoved out of the way, and that was it. It wasn't like you cost yourself a great finish or anything like that. But once you start throwing bumpers at somebody, that's part of it.
Yeah, and again, it's sort of like the Bell Kyle Busch thing earlier.
I was thinking that same thing.
You know, hey, he didn't do it on purpose. You know, Austin Hill was saying, "Well, I didn't push him all the way through turn one." Yeah, but you did enough bumping that you removed him from the lead, and you took his spot. So therefore, whether it was outright intentional or not, and I feel like, look, if it was outright intentional, that's a totally fair move in NASCAR to do a bump and run on somebody, you know. But again, you just have to make sure that they don't get back to you, you know, because that's,
yeah,
you know, it's sort of like the Allmendinger Chastain thing with Bowman, you know, a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
You know, somebody moves somebody and they're going to come get you back. So watch out, you know, where they had that three-way battle there going for the win. I'll be interested to hear, you know, obviously some, you know, this is what's fun about our podcast, right? You know, we haven't heard anybody else's take on this stuff yet after these races. And then throughout the week, when you listen to Actions Detrimental or Dark Bumper Clear or Dale Jr. Download, you're like, oh, okay, this is what other people thought too. So, and we sort of, I feel like I find out if I'm either right or wrong in my opinions, you know, hear the Stacking Pennies guy or now Kevin Harvick's podcast, whatever it is, right? Like, you're listening to hear what other people say. So, hopefully, if other people disagree, I'd like to learn about that and maybe I'll have it better for next time. But I just feel like I didn't really see Austin Hill's case in this situation. And I thought SVG was fair about giving it back. So
he was. And I will say, I mean, it could be heat of the moment thing too with Austin Hill. Like, you give him an hour, maybe goes back, looks at it, or he thinks about it and just kind of processes it. And he's like, ah, whatever, you know, it's fine. Like, I'm still able to finish the race, all of those things. And maybe just heat of the moment though, you take the helmet off. I try to give them the benefit of the doubt of they're just in the moment, they're fired up and angry, which is, you know, that's part of it. That's what the beauty of NASCAR is where you get interviewed right away, and where other sports, you get a little bit of a buffer to cool down.
So that was a doubleheader, the Xfinity race. The earlier in the day, the truck race happened, and the big story was Connor Zilich, the 17-year-old, quite a prodigy. And, you know, all the talk and the hype was surrounding him going into it. And with good reason, right? Like, I mean, the guy in his first NASCAR start, National Series start, goes out, sets the track record for trucks, wins the pole. And he's already won, you know, the Daytona 24 hours, the Sebring 12 hours this year. Again, 17, he was, you know, in Europe for a time. Once on the you know, sort of the F1 path, you know, karting over there. And the story goes, you know, he's karting and Keelan Harvick's karting too, and Harvick spots him, Kevin Harvick, and gets him sort of on the stock car path. And now he's a Trackhouse development driver, and we're going to be hearing a lot about him. So this was his first shot, and wins the pole, and then goes off into turn one up the hill. And unfortunately blows turn one, setting up a huge sequence of events for him, which is a very up and down day. But ultimately, despite two penalties, getting spun, a flat tire, blowing turn one, contact with Ty Majeski that almost cut down another tire, he ends up finishing fourth, then gets on a plane, flies to Pensacola, and finishes fourth in the ARCA race over there. So what was your, you know, impressions of the guy? What did you think of what you saw from your first look at him, maybe?
I've looked at him. I've watched a lot of TA2 races. I'm a huge fan of the Trans Am series. I think it's arguably some of the best racing out there. And the TA2 class is just ridiculous. And Connor has had a lot of success over there. He's won a bunch of races. And he's a guy for the last... honestly, like 2 years, you've heard his name, and really over the last year, a lot. It's really percolated, and I've had a lot of conversations with people, somebody that I really respect in the industry who knows these things and who's much smarter about prospects and that kind of thing and who's got it, told me that this guy's a future cup champion recently. And I was like, okay. And so I was very excited to see what he could do, and I wasn't surprised. Like, we shouldn't – he's 17 years old. I understand that. But you look at his pedigree – on road course racing, coming from Trans Am, which is not too dissimilar from this, you know, racing sports cars and stuff, and coming over here and having success in the truck series, like, that's, I don't want to say I expected that, but that to me was not like, oh my God, wow. It was like, okay, yeah, like, so this, he is showing why he's got it, whatever it is, he's got it, and I think he's going to be a star. The question is, and I think it's really, really important to note this about Connor, is this was a road course. This is his what his bread and butter is. This is what he is so good at. And he has run a lot of oval races. He's run in the ARCA E-Series this year, as you mentioned. He's ran Cars Tour races. He actually has a win in the Cars Tour. He's like, you know, he's won other oval races. But that, to me, is where we're really going to get a sense of how he develops. Because ultimately, if he's going to have success in NASCAR, it's not going to be just because he can run well in road courses. It's going to be whether you're well-rounded. It's much... I'm not comparing the drivers because they're so much different in their careers, but it's not dissimilar from SVG. You know, like, you're going to do great in road courses. We know that. But how are you going to do it Las Vegas and Bristol and all of these other places? Because that's how you become a champion NASCAR driver. That's what we have to see from Connor. By all accounts, he's making that transition, has made it well, and he's putting in the time. You look at what he does and where he runs across the country, runs a lot of regional grassroots stuff, late models, runs ARCA stuff. I mean, he's putting in the groundwork. The results are starting to bear fruit. I think this is the start of something very, very big for him.
Well, speaking of him, so remember last week we were talking about texting the wrong people?
Oh, yeah. I was saying
I'd never done that. All this stuff. So
you did it, didn't you?
I didn't do that. I think I kind of did something worse.
Yes. I'm here for this.
Okay. So this is so embarrassing.
Oh, so I'm here for you. No one's
Connor
listening.
Zilich,
it's okay.
You know, after the race, he gets out of his truck. There's a bunch of media people. And like some media people are doing interviews with him. One was our friend, Alan Cavana, who he did MRN and PRN in the same day, by the way. That was a cool doubleheader for him. But so he had the interview with Zilich. And so I took a picture of him, of them talking. And then I texted it to Alan. And I was like, hey, you know, if this is you interviewing Connor after his first NASCAR race, maybe you want to keep this someday. You know, that'd be cool. Like 20 years from now, like let's say he is future Cup champion or whatever, right? You'd be like, oh, that's cool. Here's me interviewing you after your first race. It's cool to look back on that kind of stuff. Then next up for Sirius, Alex Weaver was interviewing Zilich. So I took pictures of her. And then when we got back in the media center, I came over and I said, here, let me airdrop these photos to you. So she pulls up her airdrop. I'm standing next to her and I'm like, oh, you want these photos? She's like, oh, this is great. You know, thank you so much. And she didn't pop up right away on my airdrop thing. You know, in the media center, there's so many different phones. So I'm seeing all these people so I'm like, oh, I need to like scroll over so I could see her name. But I didn't realize you can't scroll over. So when I hit the first name, it just started airdropping to them, which was Bob. So I look over at Bob and he's looking over his phone. And I just realized I just airdropped photos of Alex Weaver to Bob. And he's like looking at his phone like, and I'm like, Bob, I'm like trying to get his attention. I'm like, Bob, no, I was trying to send those to her. I just thought, oh my God, what does Bob think I'm sending photos of Alex Weaver to him for? This is so embarrassing. But fortunately, it was quickly cleared up. But I just thought, man, I just told Jordan that how could I would never text the wrong person. And I was sending photos to the wrong person in the media center. So I was just like, no.
It's not the first time you've mocked and ridiculed me and then ended up doing something very similar. So, you know, that's just how it is with you. Like, I get it.
You know what that's
like,
called?
Karma.
Karma.
Yeah.
I brought that on myself. I did.
Yeah. You just, you know, be more understanding and accepting. Like I am like, hey, you know, people, you know, things happen. No big deal. So yeah, it happens.
Karma. I brought it.
Could be a lot worse. Hey, listen, you could have sent a lot worse photos to Bob. So, you know,
I don't have worse photos. You that's probably on your phone, buddy.
I am not. We're not talking about what's on my phone. We are not going down that road.
Well, something I'm not worried about karma with is the good race poll because I have not only claimed a victory, but called my shot in a wrap and then won. Yeah, I'm back in the game, everybody. I am back.
Can I just say, like, I am genuinely, like, befuddled about what Bristol did last week. What did it finish at? 88%?
Yeah, it was in the
90s, yeah. I'm not saying I should have won the guess. I'm not, whatever. I mean, I would say I probably went too high. I just...
how that isn't in the 90s, like, blows my mind. Like, I that is woefully, woefully under, like, undervoted. I just do not understand it. And it's crazy. We're talking about a race that was 88%, and it's not getting enough respect. But it's like, I don't know what. And I went back and I rewatched the race, like I always do every week. And I thought the broadcast crew did a really damn good job of Harvick and Bowyer up in the booth of laying out the different strategies and what was going on and everything. So for me, it wasn't, and I heard from some people, oh, it was confusing. We weren't this and that. It's like, what were you listening to? Because like Harvick and Bowyer were like all over what was going on. And so I cannot wrap my head around the fact that you won. Congratulations. Kudos to you. Great. But that was an 88%. Like, I do not understand that.
Look, I mean, I don't think it should have been in the 80s. I wanted it to be in the 90s. I thought it should be what you were saying, like one of the best races we've seen. I thought it was yes. Badass, awesome race. But I could see on Twitter that there was some people that were very, very, very angry during that race. Why? And they were they were angry at, you know, how could Goodyear do this? How could NASCAR do this? This is BS. This is not real racing. They're just riding around. And you still had some drivers say that even this week. I think Bell said something along those lines. It was just riding around and not doing anything. Blaney still didn't.
Blaney really said like it. That I race. Was there.
You know, yeah. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's depending on who your driver was, but I think also like a lot of people, as much as we were saying, this was real short track type racing. Like this is old school type racing. Some people didn't want that. And they also made the point, you know, at Bristol in particular, like you won't, that's not what you're looking for at Bristol. They didn't want a tire management race. So I think that's where the 12% of people comes in where, and it's not a huge percentage. I mean, obviously 88% of people said it was a good race, but, yeah, I think it absolutely deserved to be in the 90s. I could see when you guessed that it was going to be a record, I could already tell that people were, there was probably about 1 in 10 people I thought that were down on it. And that's why originally I said I was going to guess 88%. And then when you said 96, I said, oh, I'll do 92 and hedge a little bit. But yeah, you could tell. So
I don't get it. I don't know. I feel like this is a prime example of what fans, you know, fans want one thing and they get it. And then it's like, they're not happy. And
but again, that's a small percentage of fans. The majority of fans liked it. And I get what you're saying, but the vast majority said this was cool.
I know. Like we're complaining about, again, we're talking about a race that was 88%, which is, you know, but it's just, I don't know. I just don't understand why.
Actually, and it was 87.3, by the way.
For
the
see, now, it's, yeah. Now I'm even more angry because it's even lower than I thought. The hell with this.
Okay. Well.
Stupid poll.
Speaking of the stupid poll, I have to go first this week. And obviously, I don't think it's going to be a great rating. The question is, you know, how low does it go here, right? I do think that Bell making it interesting at the end, especially if you're sort of a road course purist, that's compelling. I mean, there were some elements of that, sort of the chasing down sort of aspect of the McDowell win last year, right? Like that was very a stirring win at the Indy Road Course. I don't think this battle was quite that good, but it was okay. But I just am not thinking that it's going to be a very high race. I think most people were just like, I didn't like this. You know, this was, nothing really happened for a lot of it. You know, no natural cautions. You know, the Road America race that was the last no caution or no natural caution race before this, they actually got a 55.6, which is really a lot higher than I thought. I don't know if that was because Reddick won and it was kind of like a new,
it was a good battle at the end.
Yeah. Was it him and Elliot or something?
Him and Elliot. Yeah. He chased down Elliot and they battled a little bit. It was a good ending. And it was a natural race. So
yeah. Yeah. So I, you know, I'm looking at like last year, Watkins Glen got a 39.6. Last year, Sonoma got a 43.2. I think it's going to be somewhere in there, honestly. I don't think this is going to be great. So I think I'll, for whatever reason, 39% is jumping out at me. Oh, is that close to what you?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm say 30. So just go over under then if you want. I don't care.
I'm going to go under. I think it's going to be under. My number I was going to guess was 38. And what did Dakota get last year? Off the top of your head, do you have it?
Yeah. So let's see. Last year's Coda race was actually not terrible. It was 72.5. People liked the clown show restarts that I didn't like, I guess. So 72.5 last year.
I didn't see, and I hate to use social media as a gauge because it's always risky, but I just did not see a lot of positivity around this race. Again, not saying I didn't like it. I thought it was fine. It was a road course race like so many I've ever seen. But I don't think people are going to be happy with it. So I'm gonna go 38. I am not Price is Righting you.
You just did.
No,
it's fine. But I mean, I said 39. You said 38. So
yeah, you took my number. So that's the only reason why.
Okay. Well, you might as well just say 38.9 and make it.
No, I'm not going to be
you're so noble and don't want to.
Thank you. Thank you for recognizing that my nobility and understanding that I am a sportsman who plays the right way.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Any other final thoughts or things that we didn't touch on that you want to talk about or anything?
Richmond next week. Very curious.
Night race too.
Night race.
Easter night race.
Easter night race. It's going to be interesting. Coming off of a interesting Phoenix, coming off of a Bristol that was, I thought was good, which is talked about, but I don't know where people are standing. It's going to be interesting to see how people feel about the short tracks. Cause as we said, after Phoenix and everything, the stretch here, this Richmond Martinsville stretch, I think is going to give us a really good idea where things are at for the short track package. And if it's working in the direction NASCAR needs to go or more drastic changes need to be made.
Well, I'm sure we'll have plenty to say about that race. By the way, before we go, we have some breaking news.
Oh, what do we got?
Justin Haley DQ'd.
That's too bad.
He did not meet the minimum post-race weights. And he really, I mean,
that's
he had another
bad.
Good race.
I mean,
even though it was 17th, like that was still, he was actually running better than that for a while. And yeah. He's been very impressive.
Yes, he has. Yeah. Rick Ware Racing has done a nice job over there of really doing what they said, which was building that program up and building a program around Haley, and they're doing it. They're good for them, but that's unfortunate for sure.
Yeah. So we got that in there. All right. Anything else?
I got nothing.
Okay. All right.
Let me look here at the list. No, we literally have covered everything on our list.
All right. Well, the next 2 weeks are yours. You're back at the track. Then I get to return for the next Texas race in this state at Texas Motor Speedway, one of our beloved places.
Love that place.
So, yes. Anyway, all right, everybody. Thanks, as always, so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time on The Teardown. See you, everybody.
Check out Dirty Boat Media.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram.